Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.
Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Ka'Chava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's Ka'Chava, Ka'Chava.com, code NEWS.
It's no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun. Because you deserve the truth.
MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein.
I'm Michael Isikoff.
And I'm Karen Greenberg.
And this is a new edition of the Spy Talk podcast. Well, we have 2 scintillating guests today. Ron Kessler, the prolific author of a handful of books on the FBI and CIA, and John Cypher, a retired senior CIA officer who spent nearly 30 years in operations, much of them against the Russians. They're going to talk about the absolutely irrational move by Tulsi Gabbard and some congressional Republicans to move primary responsibility for counterintelligence and counterterrorism from the FBI to the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. They'll explain why it makes absolutely no sense and would seriously erode our security should it ever come to pass. But first, there's some other news on the intelligence and national security fronts that we want to chew over a bit. One, for me, is the nutty stuff going on in relation to Venezuela and intelligence. It turns out that Trump and a couple of minions in the Justice Department have been entertaining, or maybe reviving is a better word, the long discredited conspiracy theory that Venezuela was involved in manipulating U.S. voting machines and denying Trump victory in the 2020 election. And where is that coming from? Well, multiple reports say it's being pushed primarily by a pro-MAGA former CIA officer, Gary Bernson, and a wealthy expatriate Venezuelan buddy of his, Martin Rodil, who apparently has the administration's ear. And now they've been joined by Lara Logan, the former 60 Minutes correspondent turned far-right influencer. Trump, after watching the conspiracy mongers on Logan's podcast, posted on social media, "We must focus all of our energy and might on election fraud," all caps. Really? election fraud again. Mike, you've written about Trump and election fraud and lately about Venezuela. What do you make of this?
Yeah. Well, actually, I did a book about the Georgia case against Donald Trump.
So you did.
As part of that, just looking into with my old colleague, Dan Kleinman, we wrote the book, Find Me the Votes Together, looking into the just sort of wacky conspiracy theorizing that Trump's people were doing after that 2020 election. We focused in particular, there's this command post at the lawyer Lynn Woods' plantation in South Carolina. And who shows up but this same Gary Bernstein, the former CIA officer, with a hot video of a former Venezuelan security guy claiming he was present at meetings years earlier at which Hugo Chavez and Smartmatic executives plotted to rig elections in Venezuela and the United States. This would have been like 10 years before the 2020 election, but it was all plotted by Hugo Chavez. So this CIA officer said, and here's the thing. Bernstein presents the video to Sidney Powell, the wacky lawyer for Mike Flynn, who was pushing a lot of these conspiracy theories. She immediately calls up Trump at the White House, says she's got it. She's got the hot stuff. And they overnight the video to Donald Trump in the White House, fueling all the crazy Dominion stuff. And here we are 5 years later. And all this stuff is revived by the same characters as an excuse to go invade Venezuela. There we are.
Good Lord. He'll swallow anything. I mean, last week it was the so-called 28-point peace plan. Yeah. It turns out to have been basically written in Moscow with the collaboration of Trump envoy Steve
Witkoff
at a meeting in Miami. That's dead now, but
right,
Karen, save us.
Well, I just want to point to the bigger picture here, which is that this, you know, conspiracy theories about invalid elections is actually extraordinarily dangerous.
Sure.
And not just in the United States. I mean, the attempt to say and to convince people, and, you know, it's caught on in a number of circles that elections are invalid really undermines so much of what holds countries together, what makes countries able to go forward. And so it's frightening beyond just the, you know, conspiracy part of it, the destructive part of it within the United States. It's really a bad moment.
I just got one other short item I want to mention. Of course, we've all read front page news. The indictments of Comey and Letitia James have been thrown out because the U.S. attorney in Alexandria was invalidly appointed or named. You know, the only point I want to make about this is just the sheer incompetence of the Pam Bondi Justice Department with Kash Patel at the FBI. And, you know, this has significance not just for these crazy, you know, revenge cases that Trump is ordering from the White House. That office, the U.S. Attorney's office in Alexandria, Eastern District of Virginia, has been the premier office for national security espionage cases for decades. It's the go-to place because of the competence and experience of the prosecutors there in bringing those sorts of very important national security cases. And now that entire office,
another clown car,
has become a clown car overseen by a U.S. attorney who was invalidly appointed. Many of the experienced prosecutors are leaving. It's just, to me, the underlying point here is incompetence.
Well, there's one more point of this just to make, which is that it's yet another example of the Trump White House denying the fact that we have a separation of powers and that there is the unitary executive is not how they defined it to be. So they took what happened here. The reason it's invalid is they took Congress, they took the Senate out of the decision-making process. Right. And that's what made this invalid. And so
this
idea—
And I love it because they relied, the judge relied on a OLC opinion written by Samuel Alito in 1983, who said, you can't do this kind of thing. It'll be very interesting to see what Alito does when this case gets appealed to the Supreme Court.
You can't make it up, as they said. And now they're going after Mark Kelly, former Navy pilot and astronaut, who joined the Senate, ran for the Senate after his wife was shot by a nut. Right. And now
they're actually arranging for the getting the Capitol Police to arrange for FBI interviews with all six of the lawmakers who signed that, who were on that video.
Performative injustice, we might call it, because that's going to go nowhere. But of course, Kelly has to hire, all these guys have to hire, and women have to hire a lawyer, you know, to defend themselves. It's a mess. It's a horrible abuse of the system. Anyway.
On the other hand, it puts Mark Kelly in a national spotlight even more than he's been in before.
That's
and
true.
At some point, this is starting to boomerang. We've seen this before, where the targets of Trump begin to take on their own constituency over the issues at hand. So,
true enough.
You know,
Comey's sins have suddenly become forgotten. We like him now. So anyway, on to our guest, Ron Kessler, a former Washington Post and Wall Street Journal investigative reporter, is the New York Times bestselling author of The Secrets of the FBI, The CIA at War, and In the President's Secret Service. Kessler's book, The FBI Inside the World's Most Powerful Law Enforcement Agency, led to President Bill Clinton's dismissal of FBI Director William Sessions for, among other things, using the Bureau's executive jet for vacation trips. Sound familiar? You wrote a little bit about that the other day, Mike.
Yes, I did.
How Cash Patel had taken his buddies on a golfing excursion to Scotland, which the other media has caught up on. Also with us is John Cypher, who in 2014 retired at the senior rank from a 28-year career as an operations officer at the CIA, much of which time was spent dueling with Russia's intelligence services. James Bond fans should take note that Cypher also served as a lead instructor at The Farm, the CIA's clandestine training school. So he knows all the tricks, and he's also a recipient of the Distinguished Career Intelligence Medal. Our interview with them was recorded last week. Ron Kessler and John Cypher, welcome to Spy Talk.
Glad to be here.
Good friends, both of you. Known you guys for a long time. And you are as best a source as we could consult with on this thorny question of counterintelligence and what's going on in Washington. There might be, or there seems to be, an effort by Republicans in the House to transfer primacy in counterintelligence away from the FBI and to the Department of the ODNI, National Intelligence, that's Tulsi Gabbard. Ron, you wrote a terrific piece for us on this this week. And why don't we start with you and your objections, which I think we all share, of why this would be a terrible, terrible thing to do.
Terrible. Just a quick reminder of what the ODNI is, which is the 9/11 Commission recommended the establishment of the ODNI. Before that, there were only a few dozen employees in the office of the Director of Central Intelligence who would coordinate the intelligence community. Mm-hmm. But the 9/11 Commission said, well, we should have this separate agency, the ODNI, and they envisioned it as about 200 employees. Well, now, lo and behold, it's way over 2,000 employees. The exact number is classified.
Like a mushroom is grown in the dark.
Yes. And what they do is a mystery. Their Auburn Inspector General a few years back did a report and said he interviewed a number of the employees and they didn't know what their own agency is supposed to do or is doing.
That's a problem.
Yeah. And I interviewed Art Cummings, who was in charge of counterintelligence and counterterrorism at the FBI, who would go to their meetings. And he said, we would just go scratching our heads. We didn't know what they were trying to do. They seemed to just ask for different reports, you know, and everything took a long time. And they contributed absolutely nothing. So along comes Tulsi Gabbard in charge of this agency, which, according to my own op-ed in the Washington Post a year ago, is the do-nothing agency. The headline was abolish this do-nothing agency. And Tulsi Gabbard, you know, having nothing better to do, comes up with this scheme to strip away from the FBI its counterintelligence responsibility, which includes counterterrorism. And guess what? We have not had a successful foreign counterintelligence strike since 9/11 because of the FBI. FBI rolls up the plots, changed its whole approach after 9/11 because of Bush. Bush was giving a rundown on the 9/11 attack from Mueller. And Mueller was going into all the possible prosecutions and legalities. And Bush said, wait a minute, that's all fine, but I want to know what you're doing to stop the next attack. And with that, the whole approach of the FBI changed to cultivate sources instead of putting people in jail right away to find out, you know, what the next plot's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's had such an incredible record of success. What more do you need to know than that record of success? And yet, Gabbard, mainly Gabbard, has come up with this idea that we should just strip away the whole counterintelligence function of the FBI, which includes law enforcement, which is critical to developing sources, threatening to put people in jail and not having to go to some other agency, which is what MI5 has to do to convince them to arrest someone.
It's time for a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
History is messy. It's weird, wild, and anything but boring. Rainy Day Rabbit Holes is a history podcast about unhinged stories that make you stop and ask, wait, is this real life?
From crazy disasters and tasty scandals to enlightening and surprising heartwarming tales, we explore the moments where people behave badly and sometimes beautifully.
We've got naughty politicians, cultural chaos, and a deep love for the Pacific Northwest, including Bigfoot.
It's thoughtful, irreverent, occasionally serious, and always entertaining.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
MSW Media.
And we're back. We've described this as Gabbard's proposal. I didn't realize that it's actually already in the FY 2026 Intelligence Authorization Act put there by Rick Crawford, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. So they've got some traction on this, or she's got some traction on this, at least.
But it was her idea.
Republican-controlled House. But my big question about this is, if you take it away from the FBI, ODNI has hundreds, if not thousands, of analysts. Do they have agents and investigators who can actually serve?
Oh, no. We have to recruit them and train them. And as Art Cummings, who is the head of counterintelligence at the FBI, said in my article, it would take a decade to teach all these people, recruit them, get them to understand the Constitution, and focus properly on
what we're really talking about here is creating an MI5.
Well, wait,
intelligence agency.
I have to interrupt here for a second. I just want to talk about what ODNI was designed to be from its earliest days. It's not designed to be a, quote, intelligence agency the way we're talking about it. It's designed to be to bring together the intelligence agencies so they're on the same page, so they share information that they have. There are 18 intelligence agencies. And remember, the intelligence portfolios inside a number of agencies were ramped up after 9/11, and the idea of the ODNI was to coordinate these various agencies so that there would be more connecting the dots, sharing intelligence.
And yet the FBI was kept out.
No, but what happened at the FBI was that they set up their own intelligence. I mean, Bob Mueller was very clear about this. We're going to do this so that we don't the CIA is not going to build and design and develop an MI5 for domestic purposes. We're going to do it at the FBI instead. And that was his intent in building out this extensive counterintelligence operation at the FBI, which actually transformed the FBI in terms of how we understand it. And you can see that in Jim Comey's testimony when he. So I'm just saying it to say that though the ODNI doesn't have the expertise, it has the expertise in the fact that it has these. Okay, so John, I know you disagree, and I get that, but I'd love to hear it because it's not really about, you know, can Tulsi Gabbard train people? It's about can she work with the people that are allegedly trained in these other agencies. So maybe, John, you could talk to that?
This doesn't make sense. You know, that's the whole problem. The actual, you know, counterterrorism is being done in the FBI. And if you did, you know, put on top of that, Tulsi Gabbard to sort of, you know, just get in the way.
I agree.
Nothing whatsoever.
No, there's no question, but I just want to separate the issues because what we're really talking about is dismantling a lot of the 9/11 state that some of us had problems with after 9/11. And what's happening here, I want to just distinguish between structural problems and just plain incompetence in terms of who's running them, in terms of their professional background, their understanding of the task, their understanding what the different agencies done. And so, John, I didn't want to cut you off.
Yeah, let's hear from John Cypher and talk a little bit, John, about what the CIA has a piece of this counterintelligence, counterterrorism world as well.
I think we're conflating counterterrorism and counterintelligence. The FBI has had the counterintelligence mission forever, like not just since 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, they changed how they did counterterrorism after 9/11, certainly. But counterintelligence is trying to see what foreign actors are doing, what kind of espionage intelligence they're doing against the United States to try to thwart that.
In terms of the structure, the counterintelligence division of the FBI includes counterterrorism. So I know, you know, it's all confusing, but it's all one of
the person in charge has counterterrorism and counterintelligence, but the counterintelligence mission is a separate
thing.
So the FBI is the place that's where counterterrorism and counterintelligence go. So counterintelligence has always been done there. And of course, the CIA plays a role in that because essentially we used to have a term like there's counterintelligence defending against trying to see what foreigners are doing here. Then there's counterespionage, catching spies, trying to find who is spying, what Americans are spying for the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, and others.
Correct.
And in that regard, usually the FBI and the CIA have to work together because we used to have a phrase.
Yeah, well, I don't say any other agencies too. National
security. Okay, but essentially on the issue of counterespionage, of catching people, we've said it takes a mole to catch a mole. So almost every single American spy that's ever been caught, the information came from CIA sources overseas that were then shared with the FBI, and the FBI then put together surveillance cases.
No.
What's that?
A lot of it was uncovered by the FBI on its own. It didn't.
Absolutely not. Not American spies. Tell me one. Go ahead. One American spy.
No, I mean, if you run down the Walker case, for example, you know, it was some girlfriend or wife who ran it.
That's a good point. You're right. That was. Yep.
That was the family of spies that got involved in stealing submarine secrets. John, if you could explain a little bit, or start, and anybody can jump in. It's picking up on what Karen said. The ODNI cannot take over counterintelligence because it doesn't have the horses. It would have to bring in essentially everyone from the FBI, quit their jobs at the FBI and move over to the ODNI, right?
The original, she's absolutely right. So the ODNI was put there to manage budgets, to make sure all these agencies are talking to each other. And it was created essentially for political purposes after 9/11 to show we were doing something. Now, and then over time, it's had to try to create, you know, things to do. So the ODNI oversees counterintelligence in a sense already because they deal with the FBI, they oversee what the DOD is doing, what the CIA is doing. The notion that they want to then take it in doesn't make sense because they don't have people, expertise, investigators, professional investigators. And that's why the FBI and the CIA and others are against this idea. But then there's also, just to add to it, there's sort of the partisan political thing here. Tulsi Gabbard, I think, is not, you know, a serious professional. She's already said that the counterintelligence in the FBI, these people are traitors to the Constitution. And she's, you know, fired a number of people who she believes you know, are not providing information that they think the administration wants. And so I think her intention here is probably more partisan than professional. And I think we're right to say that professionally it doesn't make any sense.
Let me ask you, Ron. You talk to President Trump from time to time, I understand.
It goes back to the 1980s.
Since the 1980s. So do you think this is President Trump's idea, part of his retribution campaign against the FBI?
No, but I think it is Tulsi Gabbard's intention to show that she's loyal to Trump and try to please Trump, suck up to Trump, if you will, by coming up with this idea. So, you know, same idea. I don't think Trump specifically came up with you know, exactly how to do this, but this whole travesty of going after the FBI over what it did 6 or 7 years ago. Jeff, you linked in my article to a previous article, which went into what really happened in the FBI as far as going after Trump is concerned. And what really, I mean, this is so unbelievable. Nobody's picked it up. But the person who actually started the counterintelligence investigation of Trump, as opposed to going into whether Russia was trying to undermine the election, was the deputy FBI director. What's his name?
McCabe, Andrew McCabe.
Thank you, McCabe. As soon as Trump fired Comey, McCabe became acting FBI director. And he, lo and behold, he started this investigation specifically targeting Trump as a counterintelligence investigation. Now, why did he do that? What basis was there? Well, idiot that I am, I actually read his book, and it went into exactly why he did it. And you won't believe what he said. And this is all 6 years ago. But he said that Trump was being interviewed by Lester Holt on NBC. And he said, when I fired Comey, I thought about this Russia thing. So based on that, they started the investigation. Now, Trump said what he meant was, I meant that I wanted this investigation to be done properly. And sure enough, he did not shut down the investigation. But that's the real story of the travesty of how the FBI went after Trump for no reason whatsoever. And that was 6 years ago.
Well, no reason whatsoever.
John, I suspect you have something to say about that. But these things have already been investigated, right? So the FBI IG investigated that. John Durham investigated it for 3 years. They did not come up with it. And separately, the investigation wasn't a counterintelligence investigation. And counterintelligence investigation would look at Trump's money, his contacts overseas, all these other kind of things. It was an investigation of the campaign and of the what was called collusion. That is not a counterintelligence investigation.
Well, I mean, the answer to this is whether or not it was proper for McCabe to launch the counterintelligence investigation. It was not in and of itself a crime to do so. So there's not necessarily any reason for John Durham to investigate that decision unless he found something improper in the basis for the investigation. But if we could just take a step back to the issue that we're talking about here a bit. I mean, what we're one part of this we haven't discussed is the civil liberties implications of taking it away from the FBI. The FBI works under very strict ground rules about who it can investigate, what the predicate is for launching investigations. It has to play by the rules. It has to follow the law because its agents ultimately have to show up in federal court and answer questions, and they got to be completely clean about the way they conducted those investigations. It's not intelligence agencies don't operate by those rules. They operate overseas, and they are not, you know, they can bribe people, they could trick people, they can do all sorts of things to get information. There's a fundamental difference in the approach of the FBI versus intelligence agencies. So how do you square that by taking counterintelligence away from the Bureau and putting it in agencies or an agency like ODNI that isn't governed by the same kind of rules?
Exactly.
No, I think that's right. And I think even the CIA would agree that it should stay in the FBI. FBI has experienced professionals. They have regulations. They have law behind it. They have everything that, you know, and the DNI, what they can do is what they were set up to do, is they can coordinate to make sure the CIA and the Defense Department and these other places are assisting the FBI in that mission.
If I were a betting man, looking back at 50 years of FBI history, I'd say that Tulsi Gabbard doesn't have a chance on Capitol Hill against the FBI, which has many, many friends.
I think there's more chance that the DNI gets shut down than FBI right. gives up counterintelligence.
Good what, point.
What right. do you think, Ron? Does the FBI still have the juice on the Hill? The fear and favor that it won on the Hill under J. Edgar Hoover and his successors?
Yeah. You know, on the one hand, whenever anyone in Congress talks about the FBI, they always say, you know, I just love them. I know I've dealt with the agents for years. They're so good. We need them. But then, you know, there's a certain political spin when it comes to what's going on in the FBI. You know, for example, this recent article in New York Post saying the FBI, you know, didn't even know about one aspect of the assassin's history. That was 2 weeks after the assassination, as if we're supposed to know everything all of a sudden. So there's a lot of dishonest criticism going on.
Can I raise a question? One of the things that, you know, happened has to do with intelligence sharing. What can be shared from the FBI sphere to the ODNI sphere or the CIA sphere, however you want to understand it. So in addition to all the other layers that we're talking about, and again, this may get to John's point about counterintelligence versus counterterrorism, but I'm just wondering if there's a way in which by moving this, if that would ever happen, but at least a premise for moving it might be to shift attention away from some of the things that have to do with domestic terrorism, whether it's inspired from abroad or not. But if you really think about what would be taken away, that in part would or wouldn't be one of the things that would be diminished.
In a way, I mean, it's a perfect, they have a perfect record. We have not had a successful counterterrorism attack since 9/11. And, you know, this is sort of a typical bureaucrats' approach. Oh, we have to do something. Just do something. We don't know what. Let's just do something. That's sort of, I think, the backdrop to this whole thing.
Yeah, that's how we got the DNI in the first place.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. But, so it's kind of, yeah.
Ron, you say that there's a perfect record on counterterrorism. I'm not sure that's 100% true. There's certainly been terrorist attacks, mostly lone wolf attacks in the United States. But beyond that, there certainly isn't a perfect record when it comes to counterintelligence. I'm just looking at Crawford's release when he put this out. And I mean, he makes some reasonable points here. There's been plenty of incursions by foreign powers inside the United States harming that are legitimate counterintelligence concerns. The Chinese Communist Party, he writes, is operating police stations on American soil and pre-positioning cyber attacks on our critical infrastructure. The Iranian regime continues to plot targeted assassinations against U.S. officials. Foreign intelligence services are directing spies to steal our technology, and they've done so. So, as the record on counterintelligence is not as perfect, as you say, on counterterrorism.
But that way, I just said there's been no foreign terrorist attack
Correct.
Since 9/11, and that's a fact. And that's the main
Right.
thing we need the FBI for. Of course, there have been many other terrorism problems, domestic terrorism, all kinds of other criminal activity. But if we're talking,
what about all the other counterintelligence issues that Crawford is saying?
So Michael, my issue with that is I agree with you. And first of all, it's a deadly serious business. It's very hard. It's painstaking. It takes a long time. The Chinese are doing incredible. They have more resources dedicated at trying to break into our systems, run spies. The Russians have been doing it for decades. The Iranians are doing it. There's all kinds of people. The counterintelligence threat against this country is huge, and it takes serious effort. I think you're right. It hasn't been perfect, and it has been, there's a lot more issues. That's why I think if you're talking about counterintelligence, you need to actually beef up the nation's counterintelligence and counterespionage things. And what's happening, unfortunately, is Kash Patel and Bongino and these guys are actually tearing apart the counterintelligence
yes.
functions of the FBI when in fact they should be building them up.
Let cops be cops. Let grip cops be cops. That's just demeaning to agents. It every time I hear that, I cringe.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, right.
It's hard not to conclude that the country is not as safe under Cash Patel as it was under his predecessor.
Well, it's hard to say that, but it is not going in the right direction. I'll say that. You know, I think a third of the agents are now working street crimes and, you know, border crimes. And that's not good. You know, he came in saying he wants to close down the FBI headquarters and he wants them all to go out to the boondocks, which is crazy. The most important thing in counterintelligence is to coordinate with each other and with the CIA here in Washington. You know, it's not like some hot dog stand where you have different satellites all over the place. I mean, totally nuts, frankly.
And even the pride of FBI agents, they've now said Quantico, instead of being whatever it was, 21 weeks, is going to be a three-week course, and no longer need to have a college degree, and we want you on the streets. You know, and I work domestically with the FBI, and I also work with the FBI on counterintelligence. I was involved in the Hansen case and the Hansen arrests. The FBI, you know, is taking this seriously, and there are police. They work with the police in a lot of places. The police do a lot of the regular work, and so if they think the FBI is going out on the street trying to stop crime, this is an issue that's going to cause trouble with the police organizations. So I don't think they've thought through what is the best way to deal with both counterterrorism and regular crime. It's
totally off the wall. You know, he wants to close down headquarters and have everybody go off, you know, into the boondocks. I mean, just nuts.
Well, with your contacts within the FBI, do you get a sense that the, you know, institutionalists are prepared to do something to protect the agenda of the FBI and the skills and the professionalism of it? Or is it really that easy to just pull the plug and have it dissemble and be dismantled?
You know, the whole force of the FBI is going to be trained on this, and none of it makes any sense. None of these proposals make any sense to anybody. So, you know, it does come back to Tulsi Gabbard trying to suck up to Trump over what happened 6 years ago. And we're playing with our safety.
It's all performative, right? Because the Senate's not going to look kindly on anything like this, that's for sure.
Right. And if we do have an attack, a serious attack, they would be blamed. Trump would be blamed. Tulsi Gabbard would be blamed. They don't seem to realize that either.
You know, what is Tulsi Gabbard have on Trump is what I want to know.
Well, she's very charming. That's what she has.
Well.
And what does Cash Patel have on the president?
You know, I wrote three op-eds against appointing Patel to the FBI. So that's where I stand. He never should have been appointed.
I don't know if you saw, there was just yesterday a big New Yorker piece on Cash Patel about his background. And yeah, he's clearly unfit for the job, clearly.
And let's not forget, he's been using the FBI aircraft to fly around the country, indeed the world, to see his girlfriend, to go golfing, to go to a shooting in Texas at a ranch.
Mr. Kessel, you're like two great investigative reporters. Have written about this and for years, and you obviously with FBI Director Sessions, for example, and ended up getting himself fired,
which
based
Ron
on
is responsible for. So,
where do you think the base at the FBI? Just to ask this question again about the institutionalists, which Karen raised, really good question. When are we going to see some backbone among the institutionalists and say, you know, just to step out on the sidewalk and say, you know, have 40 of them say, we have no faith in the leadership of Cash Patel.
Well, they'll all get fired the next day, right? So there is that.
The FBI Agents Association has already criticized Patel. But, you know, most of this has to be done behind the scenes. And I think it is going on because you don't have to be an expert field to realize how foolish these ideas are. You know, in my piece, I quote John Martin, who was in charge of prosecuting spies for 26 years. And during that time, he prosecuted, I think, the same number of spies or close to it. And there was only one acquittal. And a lot of that is because of the careful job that the FBI does combining counterintelligence with law enforcement.
Do you worry about Kash Patel taking the FBI down that horrible historic road of illegal operations, break-ins, mail opening, and so on, that the FBI and death threats that the FBI was doing in the 1950s and 60s into the 70s, I should add?
That's a great question. I don't think that is his style. I think he's more interested in going to Las Vegas and having wonderful dinners in New York with his girlfriend. He doesn't seem to be that focused on anything in particular.
I think that, you know, I'm thinking about how they ginned up this case against Antifa, which is like saying, you know, investigating feminism as a crime. You know, it's a movement. It's not a group with a hierarchy, as anyone who's paid 2 seconds attention to this knows. So couldn't that be a cudgel that the White House could force or tell Kash Patel to do?
Well, I think, you know, Patel will ferret around with you know, specific aspects of that. But to, as you say, to go into Antifa, you know, which doesn't exist, would be a losing battle. You know, and I think Pam Bondi understands that, and so I'm not too concerned about that yet. Mm. But who knows?
I don't see a lot of evidence of Pam Bondi's adherence or affection for constitutional.
Well, I think
rule.
Any of them. I don't think they came into this because none of them had experience in this world. I don't think they came in with a vision of what they wanted for the FBI or the national security. Their vision is, I'll do whatever Trump wants me to do, and I want to make sure I don't upset him. And so unless Trump says, I want you getting on people's phone, mm-hmm. I don't know if they'll think to do it. If Trump tells them to, I think they will do it.
Yeah. You know, I think Chris Wray did a very good job, and he didn't have any experience in counterintelligence, but he was a good lawyer and well-intentioned, and I think he did a very good job. Keep in mind that, you know, the ultimate result of poor counterintelligence could be that we are wiped out, that foreign terrorists bring in weapons of mass destruction and wipe out our whole population. That's really what we're talking about here, and that's how serious it is.
And on the pure counterintelligence level, I was talking to a psychiatrist for a story. A psychiatrist has a large CIA practice and military practice. And he said he used the words actuarial certainty, that a certain small but certain percentage of the people laid off arbitrarily in the intelligence community since the advent of the Trump administration will turn back. They need money, and they've got secrets to sell. That worry you, Ron?
Oh yeah, that's a great point. Absolutely, you know, it's a big risk. And there's no question that a lot of those people will turn out to be spies.
John?
Well, I don't think a lot. Like, I don't want to make it think that people get fired automatically or traitors to the country, because if it gives a sense. But, you know, we've learned that one spy or two spies can do a huge amount of damage. You know, there's been a couple that were spied for China and obviously the ones we know of spying for Russia. So, yeah, I mean, again, leadership should allow the professionals to do their job and then tweak to make sure that they're giving them what they need to do the job. And so in the counterintelligence world, yeah, they understand that it only takes a few people to, you know, share secrets, or especially in this day and age where you can download reams of data without and pass it on, as we saw from Hansen and others. This is a dangerous time. And so, yeah, if one or two of those many laid off decide to go make some money from the Russians or Chinese, it's a huge danger to this country.
Speaking of Hansen, that guy who appeared in the movie, whatever he did, you know, he claimed that he solved the whole case. He was just a very low-level guy who was sort of a big...
Thank you for saying that, because I was in the middle of the Hansen thing. And I'm upset that that guy is out giving speeches. He had nothing to do with the investigation of Hansen.
He was here for a few weeks.
I'm sensing another episode devoted to the Hansen case, which will be our star guest, John.
Like, I fought with the FBI a lot over time. I worked domestically with the FBI. I worked on... But they are professionals, and we should expect them. I think they do a good job. They just need the resources and support from their leadership to do a job.
Exactly.
And I think Tulsi Gabbard's grab is not a professional, serious.
But so so obviously absurd that I can't see it going anywhere at all.
I think you're right.
Well, you know, they say counterintelligence is a wilderness of mirrors, and it's earned its sobriquet. And it's even more so today, with this clown car of leaders in U.S. intelligence. It's really worrisome. So who knows what's going to happen? I guess we'll find out if a mole is caught or there's a terrorist attack. And that's just a hell of a thing to be sitting around and waiting for. And with that, thank you, John and Ron, for coming on the show. It's just great to have your expertise for us to be able to take advantage of it.
To be able to. People really who really know what they're talking about.
You guys have been writing on these things for years, and thank you for what you do.
Likewise. And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, do check out the spytalk.co news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses from the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk, and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai, and expertly edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. That's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
I'm Michael Isikoff.
I'm Karen Greenberg.
Thanks for listening.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to SpyTalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. MSW Media.
I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.